Information, please. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. And now, our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, our two anchormen, John Kieran and Franklin P. Adams, greet as our guests, first, the outstanding pianist and entertainer, the radio and concert artist beloved by millions, Mr. Alec Templeton, and second, the distinguished musician, considered the greatest living violist, Mr. William Primrose. We're going to begin, gentlemen, with a question from Millie Heffler of Tyler, Texas, and she'd like you to get 2 out of 3... In this question that has to do with your knowledge of songs. Who was described in a song as celebrated, cultivated, underrated? Mr. Templeton.
The Duke of Plaza Toro in The Gondoliers.
That is quite
Sullivan.
Right. Yes, that celebrated, cultivated, underrated nobleman, the Duke of Plaza Toro. Very good. Well, that was a little too easy. Let's see if we can get to a more difficult one. Who was described in a song as Woodenhead Puddenhead? Woodenhead Puddenhead. In a popular song. Apparently not quite as popular here as it should be.
Pudd'nhead Wilson.
I beg your pardon? You were thinking of what?
I was thinking of Pudd'nhead Wilson, but that's not a song.
No, but you may have given a songwriter an idea.
Was it written for Charlie McCarthy?
It's a song by Al Bryan and Lou Handman called Pudd'nhead Jones.
Old or new?
Pudd'nhead Jones. Remember it now, Alec?
Old or new?
It's new to me. It may be older than one thinks. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
How about... Now, that gives us one wrong. See if we can get the next right now. Who was described in a song as sweet personality, full of rascality? Mr. Templeton's hand, is that?
That's Peggy O'Neill.
That is Peggy O'Neill, sure. I don't know whether that's pretty old, isn't it?
Well, that's very old. If her eyes are blue as skies, that's Peggy O'Neill.
That's
the one,
yes. Goes back a long way, and that gives us 2 out of 3 and sends us on to this question from I. Miller of New York City. Get all on this. This is a straight musical question, gentlemen. You will have to lend us your ears. Who made history by not playing these musical works, by not playing them? Let's have the first, Mr. Kahn. I have Mr. Templeton's hand.
That was the Italian fascist hymn Giovinezza, and that was the one that Toscanini would not play.
Yes, that's quite right. When was that?
Oh, I wouldn't
about
know what year.
Well, it was very early in the history of fascist Italy, Mr. Kieran.
I think it was around 28, wasn't it?
A little later than that, in 31. It was a very courageous thing to, to do. Yes, that's one right. Now the second one, Mr. Kahn. I have Mr. Primrose's hand.
Leopold Auer refused to play it.
Play what?
The Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto.
That's quite right.
Why did he
refuse to play it?
He didn't like it, and so Tchaikovsky eventually dedicated it to Adolf Brodsky of Manchester. I think that's your hometown, isn't it, Alec?
No?
Anyhow, Adolf Brodsky of Manchester was the first to play it.
Yes. Very few violinists have refused to play it since.
Very few, yes.
Yes, of course, very popular piece. That gives us 2 out of 3, and let's see if we can get the third one right. Who made history by not playing this one, Mr. Kahn? I have two hands. I'll try Mr. Templeton.
That's The Bee by Schubert, which Jack Benny never played.
That is quite right.
Did he?
And we are always bidden remember, are we not, Alec, that The Bee was not really written by the Schubert, but by the other Schubert?
The Franz Schubert,
yeah. François, I think his name is.
François Schubert, the other one was Franz.
Schubert
is
the same name, but different fellow. Mm. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. And Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, you've been resting now. You should be full of pep for the next one. Marion Pagler of Edgemere, Long Island, sends this one in. Name the work of literature or opera in which the characters meet with these violent fates. Let's get 2 out of 3. In the first case, this isn't very violent. A girl goes mad on her wedding night, stabs her husband, and her lover is swallowed up in quicksand. This is practically a happy ending. Mr. Kieran?
Isn't that Lucia?
Yes, it is the opera Lucia de Lammermoor. Quite right. Derived from
Scott,
what?
Scott.
The Bride of Lammermoor.
Yes. In the opera, the how does the lover kill himself? He isn't swallowed up in quicksand, I think, in the opera. But
I've
only
forgotten.
He kills himself on the grave of the lady. Mm. Yes, that's quite in the proper tradition. Well, that gives us one right. Now, here's another one. This is a little less amusing. A man is stabbed, another is shot, and a girl jumps to her death in what work? Man stabbed, another is shot, and a girl, Mr. Kieran?
Tosca.
Tosca, yes. That's quite right. Puccini's opera, Tosca. And finally, the whole cast of characters dies where? This is not the audience we're speaking of, but the cast of characters. Mr. Templeton?
I was just thinking of Gianni Schicchi, but that's not...
I don't know the opera.
Puccini's Gianni Schicchi.
I don't know the opera, and I imagine a reasonable number of people die, but it has to be the entire cast. Mr. Adams, have you ever been an opera fan?
On the contrary.
Well, it's... I can't vouch for this, but apparently it's in Saint-Saëns' opera, Samson and Delilah. Is that right?
The whole cast?
You don't think so. Is that
you don't
right?
think
the
so?
Cast. No, not the whole...
Mr. Primrose, what's your recollection of the deaths at the end of the opera?
It's vague, but I don't think they all die.
Oh, well,
who's going to take the applause?
A musician would think of it.
Well, when Samson pulls the temple down in the end...
Yes, I guess he buries everybody.
Because he buries everybody.
Including the little man in the box who... the souffleur. Isn't that his name?
That's right.
Yes.
Frampton.
Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. And sends us on to this one from Mrs. Robert McLaren of Chevy Chase, Maryland. Oh, this is an amusing one. Try this one. Recite lines about 3 men whose names begin with Mick or Mac. McTeague, for example, would be one. But it has to be a line of verse of poetry. Mr. Adams?
Old MacDonald had a farm.
Old MacDonald had a farm. That's perfect, yes. That gives us 1 Mac. That gives us a Scotchman. See if we can get an Irishman now. Mr. Kieran?
Well, I can't give you a line. Give you the title of the poem.
Have to have a line. Sorry. I'd like to get the title for our information.
Well, it's The Cremation of Sam McGee by Robert W. Service.
You think there would be a line in that poem?
It certainly would. Almost any Service line should bounce right into your head.
But it doesn't bounce into yours at the moment. Well, there should be, Mr. Primrose.
It has to start with Mac or Mick?
No. It just has to be mentioned in the line.
Well, this is probably one that is not meant, but there used to be a very good old Scotch comedy song. It's called Dr. McGregor and His Wee Black Bag.
How does it go again?
That's the only line I remember. Dr. McGregor and His Wee Black Bag.
That sounds as if he could not have made it up on the spur of the moment. I'll take that.
Used to be sung by Will Fife.
Sounds all right.
I had thought of a Harry Lauder one. Oh, my, you ought to see Mackay and me, for we were fairly in our glory. It comes from the song he wrote called Tobermory.
That's right.
Good enough. And then, of course, there's our own familiar semi-national anthem, and call it Macaroni would be one, wouldn't it? More or less. Well, that gives us 3 or 4 or 5. Who are these women? She fired rifle shots through playing cards held up by people. Who was that? Fired rifle shots. All these hands. I have 4 hands and 2 hands for Mr. Templeton. I'll try Mr. Primrose first.
Annie Oakley.
Annie Oakley, yes. Anyone care to disagree?
I was going to say Carmen.
Carmen? Well, did she shoot through playing cards?
She had some. Oh, no, she didn't shoot. Any shooting.
No, shooting. She used playing cards to determine somebody's chances of life or death. How about a woman who took her husband's place firing a cannon? Mr. Kieran.
Molly Pitcher.
Molly Pitcher.
The Battle of Monmouth
in
the Revolutionary War.
That's what they say.
Was that a cannon?
Is that true, Mr. Primrose?
I didn't know it was a cannon. I thought that was a rifle, too.
A rifle?
Yes.
Oh, not a cannon.
I don't know. Mr. Kieran probably knows much better.
Mr. Kieran is not given to exaggerating. probably was a cannon. In the pictures, I think, doesn't it show a cannon?
Yes, it shows a real piece.
This woman boxed men's ears when they angered her. Who was that? Well, it might be any one of a number of people. Mr. Templeton.
Well, I'm guessing it might be Texas Guyman.
Well, I'd be guessing, too. I wouldn't know. Mr. Kieran.
Queen Elizabeth.
Queen Elizabeth. Mr. Kieran's acquaintances go back a little further than yours do, Mr. Kieran.
No.
This one served as aide and scout for General Custer. Mr. Primrose.
Calamity Jane.
That's right. Mr. Primrose, how do you happen to know all this Americana?
Read a few books.
That's all there is to it?
Mm-hmm.
You use it as a... When you stop playing the viola, you read up on our history.
That's right.
Very good.
Maybe during.
That's possible, too.
Don't lie.
Now, gentlemen, how about this one from La Belle Bridges of Elmhurst, New York? Again, a 2 out of 3 question. Can you name these characters of literature for us? They all had somewhat similar careers. The first one came on land only once every 7 years. Came on land only once every 7 years. Famous character. Who could it be? He's not only a character of literature, but of the opera, too, I think. I'm going to give you some hints, for which you'll get no... You won't get any credit if you get this right. The opera is by Wagner, I think. Mr. Primrose? Mr. Templeton?
Flying Dutchman?
The Flying Dutchman, yes. So he came on land only once every 7 years. You don't want credit for that, Primrose,
I don't think so. Mm-hmm.
All right. And who spent about 10 years trying to sail home? Mr. Kieran.
Ulysses.
Yes, how did it happen, Mr. Kieran, that it took him so long to get home?
Well, he had a stopover ticket.
when you look at the region that Ulysses sailed in, which is about as big as a large mill pond, you wonder whether he was really as anxious to get home as Homer says he was.
Well, he had some very interesting adventures.
Yes, to say the least.
They sent him back for a passport, too.
Yes, that could happen.
Who spent a year aboard a vessel with no destination? Spent a whole year aboard a vessel with no destination. Mr. Primrose.
Was that the Ancient Mariner?
No, I don't think it was a year. And he did have a destination, I think.
He doesn't make it very clear.
Seems not to terribly. Mr. Kieran?
Was that the man without a country?
No, though I'm not entirely sure. I don't know whether it was. I think it was much more than a year that Nolan spent aboard the ship.
They shifted him from ship to ship.
The one who spent a year aboard a vessel with no destination was Noah and his family, to escape the flood.
A year?
A whole year. You know how old he was, Frank, when he began his voyage? He was a mere youngster of 600, and by the 601st year, Genesis tells us, the waters had receded, and they got out on dry land.
I thought it was 40 days and 40 nights.
No, one whole year. It was the rain that lasted that long.
Right.
But you see, he did a lot of sailing in good weather, too. This is coming as the news to you, I'm sure. Mr. Hearing?
Well, the Owl and the Pussycat were aboard for a year, too.
Owl and the Pussycat.
Sailed away for a year,
year
and a day.
A year and a day.
Ah, yes. Well, that's just one day too
many.
Actually, that gives us two wrong out of three. Try this. The name of what city do you associate with these foods? A veal cutlet is associated with what city in your mind? Mr. Adams.
Vienna.
Yeah. You've been seeing Ratoff recently?
Wiener Schnitzel.
Yes, Wiener Schnitzel, found in Vienna and elsewhere. Mm-hmm. What city do you associate with minced meat, herbs, and flour? Presumably mixed. Minced meat, herbs, and flour. If you put them together, you get what? Mr.
Spelled mother.
Well, no, some mothers, but this is a special food. Oh, Mr. Templeton?
Yeah.
Philadelphia scrapple. Uh-oh. Now, Mr. Adams, what city do you associate Philadelphia scrapple with?
I didn't know there was mincemeat in it.
What one do you associate a molasses bread with? Bread with a molasses base to it.
Maybe down south.
Sounds like it.
So, Alec, Mr. Primrose?
No, I just said it sounds like it.
Sounds like Maine.
Why do you say that?
Sorghum.
Well, they use sorghum in lots of states. Mr. Kieran?
Boston?
Boston, yes.
Brown bread.
That's the right answer. And we pass on to this question from Lloyd F. Combs of Cincinnati. Let's get all on this. It's not too hard. And again, it is a question that Mr. Kahn's going to help us with. What famous military engagement of the past is suggested by the title of each of the following songs? Let's have the first. A military engagement suggested by that title. Mr. Kieran.
D-Day in Normandy.
Yes. What was being played
Apple
on
Apple Blossom time in Normandy.
Yes. That's quite right. In 1944.
For my time, I think that was
just... Famous Normandy campaign. And now, Mr. Kahn, the second. I have Mr. Templeton's hand.
A very easy one for me. That's the Richard Adamsall Warsaw Concerto.
Would you say that again for us? I didn't quite get it.
The Richard Adamsall Warsaw Concerto.
The Warsaw Concerto, and it reminds us, of course, of the great Battle of Warsaw in 1939. Is Mr. Adamsall a famous composer, Alec?
Well, at the first, that's the most popular thing he has written. I think he's written some other pieces, but that was the thing that really started him.
It had an extraordinary success, didn't it?
Yes.
Hears it all the time. Well, that gives us two right out of two and sends us on to the next one. Mr. Kahn? I have
the
primrose.
I know I think I've forgotten the question. I know the title. It's
I will.
Christmas.
I will tell you the question. You.
White Christmas.
What
White
famous
Christmas.
Military engagement of the past would be suggested by that title, which is White Christmas, as you say?
It could
Mr.
be
Primrose.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Primrose.
Does it necessarily mean Christmas, or just when there was a lot of snow around?
Because I think it has to mean Christmas.
Well, it happened in the Bing Crosby picture.
There you have me, Alec. Mr. Kieran. Mm-hmm.
Crossing of the Battle of Trenton, George Washington.
Yes, the Battle of Trenton, crossing the
Delaware.
Crossing the Delaware. The that was a took place on Christmas in 1776. That gives us three out of three. Here's a radio question, gentlemen. We should expect all four of you to be very proficient on this. It comes from E. Hochstein of New York City, and he wants to know. Let's get all on this. What radio programs sign on the air with these sound effects? I won't give you the effects, but I will tell you that the first is a creaking door. A creaking door. Mr. Templeton.
One of my very favorite programs, Inner Sanctum.
Yes. Very, very scary. That's quite right. Now, what one begins with the sound of a telephone ringing? Sound of a telephone ringing. Mr. Adams?
Probably the telephone hour.
Well, that's what a logical mind like yours would think. You know very little about radio, Mr. Adams.
I know nothing about it.
Mr. Primrose.
I think I'm in the right church, but the wrong pew. I'm not going to... I think I got the wrong...
I would like to know what's going through your mind anyway, just for fun.
I thought it was the Aldrich family, but it isn't that.
No. Mr. Templeton?
Hobby Lobby, I would say.
Begins with the telephone ringing? I don't believe so. I'm not certain. But I should think the one that's famous to most of us is Duffy's Tavern. Very amusing.
Well, Hobby
show.
Lobby does, I know.
Does it?
Yeah.
Well, we'll check with Mr. H. Lobby after the show and see whether that's true. And what one begins with a siren, a racing car, and machine guns?
I wouldn't know what it was, but I bet it's one of the children's
man or something.
Children's 515 things.
Does that mean you haven't listened to it, Mr. Templeton? Well, it's Mr. Kieran. Was that
Carrying
your hand
the pirates or something?
One of those police story things, isn't it?
Well, that's a good
Junior
G-man, good guess. It's Gangbusters, gentlemen.
Gangbusters.
I'm sorry to have to supply it. Well, Mr. Hochstein gets $100 in victory bonds. And listen to the radio, gentlemen. There are many interesting and amusing things that can be heard on the radio. Miss Elizabeth Dean of Washington, D.C., sends in a very appropriate question. She is from our nation's capital. The wife of what American president, gentlemen, interrupted cabinet meetings? Have to get two out of three on this. The wife of what American president interrupted cabinet meetings? By the way, you may guess.
John Adams.
That is a guess. It is a wrong guess, but it is a guess. No, not quite right, Frank. Miss Primrose, would you care to hazard a guess? There are only 20-odd presidents or so. Mr. Kieran?
Lincoln?
Mary Lincoln is right, yes. Now, if you'd only come in before Mr. Adams, we wouldn't have to get the next two right. Mary Lincoln interrupted cabinet meetings. Who, the wife of what president, smoked a pipe? Smoked a pipe. Now, it wouldn't be Adams, and it wouldn't be Lincoln. We got those out of the way. gentlemen, it was Rachel Jackson, who died, as a matter of fact, while Jackson was president-elect.
I was just going to say, she never reached the White House.
But she did smoke a pipe. It doesn't say that she had to reach the White House.
You said the wife of a president.
Well,
I don't want
to
be technical, but... I considered Mrs. Jackson and dropped her for that reason.
That was very rude of her. Oh, John, you know, there may be something in what
you said. You did a lot more than smoke a pipe, by the way.
Well, that is all we are going to discuss on this program this evening. She smoked a pipe. Which one hung wash in the White House? Hung wash. Mr. Primrose.
Abigail Adams.
That is quite right, yes. The wife of which Adams?
The John Adams.
Of John Adams. You know where she used to hang the wash?
It was in the... I did read which room. It was one of the big rooms, anyhow.
Yes,
one of the
in
most
the present East Room
yes,
of the White
House. One of the more important rooms of the place.
Those of us who visit the White House may see where Abigail Adams at one time hung her wash. Now, how did we make out on that one? We got the Mary Lincoln wrong, and we got the smoke the pipe wrong. That means that Miss Elizabeth Dean gets $100 in victory bonds and a set of the Britannica. Now, gentlemen, shall we continue with this one from Lester Dresner, New York City, a 2 out of 3 question. It's all about noses, famous noses. I'm going to ask you to quote a line about each of these noses, and the first is the nose of Lynette. A line about Lynette's nose. We have to know who Lynette was first before we can... Mr.
Well, Kieran. I know who Lynette was, at least one. She was in the Idylls of the King with Gareth and Lynette. That's one of the Idylls of the King.
Yes, right. She was...
Tennyson.
That's quite right.
But I don't remember what well, he said about her nose.
Well, it's a very cute line by Tennyson, and lightly was a slender nose, tip-tilted like the petal of a flower. I'll come back to you, Mr. Kieran.
Yeah, too late.
Too late. Well, I had a feeling you knew it. Gives us one nose wrong. Now we have to get the next two noses right on the button. Can you quote a line about Cleopatra's nose? Famous line, not necessarily verse, but an oft-quoted line. Mr. Kieran.
If her nose had been an inch longer or shorter, the history of the world would have been changed.
Yes, you've redeemed yourself, Mr. Kieran, except that I think an inch is going a little too far.
Well, a hair or something, I don't know.
If the nose of Cleopatra had been shorter, it is the... You're quoting from whom?
Sounds like Carlyle or something like that.
No, it was written sometime before Carlyle, originally in French by Pascal, the great French essayist and philosopher, and in his Pensée, his thoughts, he says that. And finally, gentlemen, can you quote a line about Jimmy Durante's nose? I don't want you to make up a line. I want you to give us a line that is famous, that Mr. Durante has himself made famous.
There's only one person I think who could do that, and that would be Umbriago.
I wish you were here with us, Alec.
Umbriago.
Oh, that's very good. He is here. Yeah. I'm the fellow with the great big smeller, I believe, is the patented copyrighted line of Mr. Durante. That gives us only one nose out of three, sending $100 in victory bonds to Mr. Dresner, a set of the Britannica, and passing us on to this one from T. O'Connell of Stephenson, Michigan. This, too, is a musical question. It would be a pleasure, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran, if we could get a couple of guesses from you on some of these musical questions, just for fun.
I guessed, and somebody made some money.
Well, you've made at least one friend, Mr. Adams. What member of an orchestra would be engaged in tuning up or practicing for a solo part? You haven't heard the question, Mr. Kieran.
I know. While it's on?
Pardon?
While the symphony is on.
No, if you heard him running through these phrases before a concert.
Oh, I thought... Sorry.
Are you going to concoct this whole question all by yourself? I'll run through this again. What member of an orchestra would be engaged in tuning up or practicing for a solo part if you heard him running through these phrases before a concert? Of course, the phrases would be played on the piano. Mr. Kahn, the first. I have Mr. Primrose's hand and Mr. Templer. Mr. Primrose.
French horn.
Till Island Spiegel, Strauss.
Yes, you two boys are doing pretty well together. Yes, the French horn in Strauss is Till Island Spiegel. And now, if this second one being played, Mr. Korn.
That's from American in Paris.
I beg pardon?
American in Paris.
An American in Paris.
I think they use real horns, real motor horns.
Motor horns, yes. Too.
Oh, that must be very modern. Well, who would be handling the motor horns in the orchestra?
One of the timpani. What they call the kitchen department.
Is that
the
battery?
The battery.
It will be the percussion.
Yeah, percussion department. Yeah.
Written by George Gershwin, by the way.
Written by George Gershwin, indeed. Mr. Kieran, your hand was going up and down nervously on that one.
Yeah, I knew it was Gershwin. That's all.
That's something. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. And sends us on to the third one, Mr. Kahn. I have our two musicians' hands. I'll try Mr. Templeton on that.
That is the right instrument for it, too. It's the piano solo, the second movement of the Shostakovich First Symphony.
That's perfect. Is that right, Mr. Primrose?
Yes.
Very good. Mr. Adams, how did you like it?
I don't play any of those instruments.
Whenever we have musicians on this program, Mr. Adams is sure to learn something. Not to mention myself. Mrs. Ruthie Boggs of Denver, Colorado, asks this one. A 2 out of 3 question. Can you identify these famous people of the past or present? They all had, again, somewhat similar careers. The first one was born in England, but gained his fame in America and France. Check through that one. Mr. Kieran.
Payne.
Payne
the Age
right.
of Reason.
Yes, Tom Payne. How did that happen?
Well, he got chased from place to place, to tell you the truth. You know, he got into an argument over here.
Yes, he did.
And he wrote a terrific letter... to George Washington, calling him various names.
Was it answered?
No.
No.
It never answered.
Never answered. Say, somebody ought to answer that letter. And he went back to France and got involved in the revolution there.
That's right.
Yes,
and also visited England as well.
Yes, he built a bridge in England.
Built a bridge?
Yes, the first and longest single-span bridge. It's over the River Weir.
Tom Paine did? He did? Mm. Well, now, I never knew that.
I don't know whether he actually built it, but he designed it.
Is that so? Mm. I never knew he was a bridge designer. How about this one? This man was born in St. Petersburg, but he made his reputation in London. Famous person. I should think Mr. Primrose and or Mr. Templeton might know this one. It's in their department. Was born in St. Petersburg, but made his reputation in London. Who was that? Mr. Adams?
That wouldn't be Conrad.
No, he was born in Poland, in a small town whose name I don't remember. No, it was Albert
Coates.
Albert Coates.
Albert Coates.
Oh, Albert Coates.
Mr. Primrose, Mr. Templeton, a famous composer and conductor.
Yes,
his father had business in St. Petersburg. I imagine he was an Englishman, was he not?
Well, I think one of his parents was Russian.
Oh, yes?
Yes. I think his mother, probably.
Russian. Must have been, unless Coates is a different name. Well, that gives us one wrong. We have to get the next one right. He was born in the Bronx, but gained his fame in Detroit. Mr. Adams.
Captain Greenberg.
Captain Greenberg, yes, of the Detroit Tigers. Hank Greenberg of the Detroit Tigers.
Henry Greenberg.
Good enough. Try this one.
Cost me $100.
I think we'll have time for this one from Vivian Schaefer of Chicago. Who fought because of these ladies? Who fought because of these ladies? Sandy was the name of one lady. Who fought because of her? Mr. Kieran.
That's in Mark Twain's story, the Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
Yes, and it was the Connecticut Yankee who went forth with her to rescue her mistress and other princesses in distress. That's right. Why was she called Sandy?
Oh, that was the name he gave her. I don't know what.
Maybe for Melisande or something of that sort. Who fought because of Charmaine? Fought over Charmaine? Mr. Adams.
Court.
He didn't fight with himself.
Whoever the characters were in What Price Glory.
That's exactly right. And we've got one of them, Sergeant Quirt. What's the other one?
Captain Flagg.
That's right.
And Sandy was also a name, the name that the wife of Arrowsmith gave to him, too.
Glad to know that. Now, we just have time to find out who fought because of Lois Lane. Lois Lane. Well, I see none of you knows that. Lois Lane, at the present time, is engaged to Superman. And Superman did a good deal of fighting over her. Superman, do you know who Superman is, Mr. Adams? I will explain it to you.
I know man as Superman.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, we got two out of three on that. Our time is up.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.